Welcome to Leveraging Leadership, where we unpack the art of business leadership. I'm your host, Emily Sander, Chief of Staff turned Executive Leadership Coach. In this series, we dive into the role of Chief of Staff, exploring how it can be a game changer and pivotal player on your leadership team. You'll get a backstage pass and learn about the different aspects of the role and what it takes to excel in it. We'll hear from some incredible guests who have firsthand experience serving as Chief of Staff or collaborating with one on their team. And don't forget, the Chief of Staff isn't just a title or person. It represents a leadership philosophy. Leveraging Leadership is all about finding your points of greatest influence and leveraging them to better serve those around you. Rory Liebhardt, how are you doing, sir?
Boy, it's fine Friday. I'm doing excellent. It's great to see you again. It's been, we recently reconnected, but I mean, it had been years it's been really fun seeing you lean into your passion and your journey and kind of like growing your coaching business and, you know, being, you know, just the dynamic person that you are. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. Cause I looked up to you and, you know, when we first met at G2, we worked together, I guess, 10 years ago now. Crazy.
Oh, my.
It's a decade. I was a baby. Right. I was like, in many ways, I was just like kind of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So,
I recall you being really dialed in even at that time. Like when I first joined the company, that was a big jump for me as far as kind of a career jump. And, you know, you were right there sort of like helping me get, you know, really acquainted with the business and the people, which is super important coming into any new role specifically.
I was dialed in. I was all about that job and I was driven ambitious and everything. So
seriously,
that was it. So let me do your fancy professional bio here for a second for people.
Fancy.
So Rory is a multi-time CFO, president and director of private equity-backed companies, and is now a consultant and a private investor. How does that sound?
It seems like it's like I have no focus or something. I'm all these things, but I haven't really settled into any given one. But it's been around the block, that's for sure. So, yeah.
You're one of my favorite people. So you have this illustrious career and many accolades your way, well deserved. But it wasn't always that way. So I remember Ed saying, and this is Ed Barton, Rory and I's former CEO. You can check out his conversation at episode 28. But Ed used to say, when I first knew Rory, he was selling t-shirts down on the dock. And I've always wondered, is that like a saying, or were you actually selling t-shirts on a dock? And if so, what dock?
Oh my gosh, that's going way back. That's even, you know, before I even considered myself having entered like the professional workforce. But I think what Ed was referencing is I actually did at one point when I was in my very early 20s, had a clothing company. It was called Alexei Clothing Concepts. Yep. And, you know, it was a lifestyle streetwear brand that I started with a friend that we were, you know, really into skateboarding and snowboarding, that whole vibe. And anyway, so, you know, we actually had a little business, and I think that must have come out when I first interviewed with him when I was, gosh, in my very early 20s, and he was a very young CFO as well at the time. And I think it stuck with him. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up. I hadn't thought of that in years, probably. It's so funny.
I remember him saying that over and over, and I was like, man, that must be like a East Coast saying or something. I've never heard that.
Well, and Ed definitely has a lot of interesting sayings, but, he used to call me Clifford the Big Red Dog. I mean, redheaded person.
Well, you were Big Red.
Big Red, yes, exactly. So then he called me just Clifford straight up. It's classic. Yeah, Ed's been like a really common thread as part of my career, actually, as, you know, just reminiscing a little bit with him a couple of days ago about, you know, really I kind of break down two points in my career as pretty pivotal ones. And he was responsible for both of those. So, you know, he's a dynamic dude and, you know, I owe him a lot of gratitude for what he's done for me. So.
Yes, for sure. And I think you and I, we were talking about this earlier, but you and I have both worked for Ed. I've worked for him twice and I think you've worked for him three times. So clearly he's someone we've worked for again.
Yeah. And I mean, even now today we kick around business ideas and things like that. You know, he's a really knowledgeable person and good perspective. So yeah, like we're always kind of connected no matter how long it's been since we've actually, you know, worked together. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you went from selling t-shirts, actual t-shirts on a dock to your way up to CFO. So can you give us like a snapshot of just how that happened? Super high level. and get us through, you know, when you're about to come on board at G2, which is where we first met.
Yeah. So I'll give the super abridged version of that. You know, to start off with, my sort of ambition early on, like when I was in school, I went to the University of Washington, and, you know, I was kind of gearing my studies to be a lawyer. That was what I thought I wanted to do. And so I actually got my undergraduate degree is actually in political science, but I don't run into a lot of CFOs that have that as their sort of undergraduate degree. But, you know, that's what I was really into, you know, philosophy and political science and things like that. I thought that would really lend itself to kind of a career in law. But, you know, for whatever reason, the first job out of college I took was with a company called Beeline here in the Seattle area. And that was an investment company that acquired portfolios of bankrupt consumer debt, something I never thought, like, you know, what kind of business is that? Anyway, at that point, I was just really trying to get a job somewhere. And I took an entry-level accounting role, you know, when I was just starting out. So when I got into that, I started to realize I had a real affinity for solving problems through numbers and kind of really digging into the complexity of what makes up a business from a financial standpoint. So I started in the accounting side of things, moved into more of a financial analyst type of role, which, you know, those are very different things. You know, I think, like, you know, they're both within finance and accounting, but, you know, those are two very different disciplines. And kind of by the time I had worked my way up the ladder there at Beeline, I was actually responsible for raising capital, working with the private equity investors that owned the business, and ultimately, you know, was part of the team leading that company through a sale. And eventually that company, as happens a lot of the time, and once it's acquired by a competitor, they absorb it and sort of shut down the business. So I was one of the last people out the door working at Beeline. And then, you know, for a time after that, I actually started my own, you know, bankruptcy debt purchasing business, because I understood it having worked in that world for 7 years, and it's an interesting business. And, you know, I actually still have that business today, but it's kind of been like on the side for, you know, 10, 12 years now. But at that point, you know, I wasn't quite sure what direction I wanted to go, you know, on a kind of more ambitious career side of things. And then again, it appeared in my life once again. And there was that opportunity at G2 where at that time, G2, as you recall, I'd been founder owned and had recently sold to a private equity group. And, you know, Ed, who was at one point in the CFO role there, he was elevated to president of the company. And so he needed a CFO, or he needed somebody to step into the senior financial leadership role, which he tapped me for that. And whenever kind of Ed comes calling, it's like, he's pretty persuasive, as you know. So that's where I met you. And that's kind of like where that sort of second launch point in my career, responsible by Ed, started. So, it was quite a circuitous journey.
Yes. So, yeah, and in Beeline, that's where you first connected with Ed, and I think he was saying, your manager there said, "Hey, take a look at Rory. He's doing really good at his job." And at first, Ed was like, "I don't see anything." It was like, "Oh my goodness, Rory is." And then he got to know you well, and so he tapped you for the G2 role when there was that opportunity. So you kind of made your mark on him at Beeline. And then, I remember the first time I met you, and so we were hiring for CFO, and we had multiple candidates coming through, and they would come in and talk to the team all morning long. And then we would take them out to lunch, and then we kind of wrap up at the end. So it was pretty much an all day thing.
Yeah.
We would have the candidates pick where they went to lunch as just kind of like, we want to make sure they're happy with stuff, and we want to see what kind of restaurants they take, which was interesting. So the person before you, who was a very nice man, very like buttoned up, very tailored suit, I believe, and he picked this 5-star super fancy restaurant in the middle of downtown Seattle. And then you were there the next day. Do you remember what restaurant you picked?
If memory serves, we went to the Keg. Yeah, I could be wrong on that, but
we went to Red Robin for your interview.
Yes, that's right. We did spend other times at the Keg for sure together.
That's where we went after board meetings.
Yes, Red Robin. Yep.
Yes.
God, I love me a Red Robin burger. Oh yeah. Even today. Yeah. No, that resonates. I remember it was you, me, Ed, and I think gentleman by the name of Dave Landis as well.
Landis is with us too.
Yeah. So yeah, that was cool. Like I wasn't sure what to make of it because you guys were such already a really tight unit, you know, so I was trying to make a good impression without being, you know, overly excited about the opportunity because, you know, that was a, you know, for me, that represented a big jump in my career because I hadn't been in a C-level role before that. I had, you know, kind of been in a VP director role, but that's a whole nother ball game once you kind of get up to that C-level. So, you know, as has been the case with Ed and, you know, certainly others in my career, they, you know, give me a shot potentially when I'm even sort of like, you know, I wouldn't say like seasoned or, you know, underqualified, but, you know, give me a shot on faith and, you know, let me prove it. So yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. Well, I always remember that because I was like, that speaks to who you are. And you are very down to earth and just like, let's go grab a burger at Red
Bull. Oh, yeah.
And then later, let's go take down some like bread baskets at the Keg, create.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. Well, you and me, I mean, we connected over weightlifting early on, I remember. And so, yeah, you need those carbs to keep building that muscle and getting jacked.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. So then you got hired. Because you fit in with the team really, really well. And you were very talented, which Ed knew. And I do remember, it wasn't your first day, but it was your first week. You were in charge of putting together our annual forecast. And I mean, it was your first week, so you didn't know anything about the business. You were drinking from the fire hose.
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember you, me, and Ed stayed late one day. We were in that big conference room, and it was dark out. And we had the spreadsheet on the board on the projector and we were going client by client because I think I was a client manager at that time and I knew the clients the best, I guess.
Yes, you did. And there's 300 of them, you know, it was a global company, 300 clients, a whole bunch of different product lines. Yeah, it was, my head was spinning early on for sure. Right. and you were super helpful and kind of helped me get aligned on that, you know, was drinking from the fire hose indeed.
You were, but it was funny because I was trying to like put things in financial terms. And I was like trying to pick up the phrases that you were saying to put it in your language to help you. Yeah. And I remember Ed saying, Emily, just tell Rory what's happening with this client in real life and he'll translate it into the spreadsheet and model and also the debrief to the board. Mm. And I was like, okay. So I would talk about, you know, I talked to Nina over here and she's doing this. And like later this year, they're thinking they'll put more merchants through, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I remember you putting that in the spreadsheet and you literally in real time translated what I was saying into the spreadsheet and into the debrief for the board. And that was my first launch point for this is what a CFO does. They understand the business and they translate it to the key stakeholders. And then you also did the opposite direction where you translated some of the guidance from the board to the leadership team. But is that, I mean, I still think that's a decent way to think about what a CFO does.
I would say it's certainly one of the key components. So, boy, I mean, the CFO role, it's a leadership role through and through, just like any other senior leadership role, whether it's a CTO or a CEO or something like that. At the end of the day, you're working with other people. And, you know, in order to make the business go from that CFO standpoint, you have to have the ability to communicate well with people. And so that sometimes means you're talking with folks that maybe aren't, you know, as comfortable with financial jargon, so to speak. And by the way, that's all it is. It's just jargon. It's just another way of saying like pretty simple stuff. But, you know, vice versa, I think, you know, to be a effective CEO, you have to, or CFO or CEO for that matter, you have to be able to take inputs as brought to the table from, you know, folks you're working with or customers or what have you, and actually translate that into the, you know, kind of financial terms. But the way I personally think about a CFO, just in broad strokes, is, you know, it's a person that's, as implied by the names, you know, responsible for the financial oversight of the business. And that's a big, broad topic in itself, depending on the type of business that could, you know, all sorts of things. But, you know, you have to be forward looking, which means, you know, being able to do financial analysis and financial planning and budgeting. And you also have to look backward and be able to, you know, kind of interpret financial statements through the things that have happened when you're reporting on financials. But then you can get even broader than that. Say, you know, you have to be responsible for, you know, tax and risk management, you know, kind of translating macroeconomic events and outlooks into how that affects your business. That could be how it affects your sales, how it could be what the cost of your, you know, supplies are to run the business. And at the end of the day, it's not dissimilar to any other executive role in the sense that the goal is always to maximize shareholder value, bring enterprise value to the business and the ownership, and, you know, collaborate with the folks on the team to make that all happen. So, you know, it just depends on the type of company, the industry you're in. But, you know, those are kind of the main tenets as I think about them.
Yeah. And I think you alluded to it earlier, but there's, in my brain, there's two branches to get to CFO. There's the accounting and controller side, and then there's like the finance side. And I remember I was trying to learn about the differences, and my simpleton understanding, you chime in here, is controllers and accountants are like doing the books, they're doing the accounting and making sure everything balances and making sure all the money is literally accounted for. And so they have to be almost penny perfect, or they're trying to be penny perfect. And then if you're on the finance side and you're doing that macro analysis and forecasting and putting strategy plans in place, that's more forward looking. Is that an okay way to think about it?
I really couldn't have said it any better, honestly. I think that's spot on. I think it's important for, you know, folks to think about this in terms of like, you know, you have to, in a CFO role, you have to have a pretty decent grasp of kind of both of those components, if you want to think about it that way, but you don't have to be the expert in both, right? Like, I do know some people, Ed is one of them, that truly is an expert across all of those dynamics. I don't consider myself an expert accountant. I'm very, very good with finance and kind of forward-looking things, but I find accounting very boring. And I also just, don't consider myself a technical accountant, but I do know enough to be dangerous. And I know what to look for through experience and intuition, to know whether things are, you know, as they should be or not. But yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways to become a CFO, and you don't need to be an absolute master in all those things. But what you do need to be able to do is work with people that are. So in my particular experience, I've mostly worked for small, medium-sized businesses, anywhere from, I don't know, 10 to 50 million in revenue, 100 to 120 people typically. You do have to be a little bit more of a jack of all trades, but, you know, you do work with other specialists. And in my case, I've always done really well where I've been paired up with a really, really strong controller. I've had that ability to do that. They make my life easier, and, you know, I kind of help them along from the kind of financial side of things. So I think it's all about, just as far as work in general and life for that matter, it's all about complementarity, I think. So, you know, finding that in your profession, you know, in whatever role you're in, is super important. CFO is no different.
And one thing I always admired about you is you were more than happy to bring in a specialist who, you know, was quote unquote smarter than you in that area. You were like, bring them on board. I need them, and it makes our team better. And so you weren't threatened by that in any way, or
any
of that in your way.
Yeah, I think that's important, you know, kind of, I'll say it this way again, like, I try to keep bringing it to sort of demystify the CFO role. It's very much like any other executive role. It's just about building trust with people. It's about, you know, really understanding the business. But, you know, I think, you know, if you can do that and you can sort of leave some of that ego at the door, everyone will flourish that way. So yeah, super important.
Well, I think that with you, you came from the finance side and you brought someone in who could hold up the accounting controller side. And I've interacted with individuals who have come from the accounting side. And so they're used to being penny perfect and doing all these things. And they were not as familiar with the finance side. And they instead of kind of either leaning into that and learning it or bringing someone on who could do that, they kind of stayed in their zone, and it was a little bit tricky at times. So
I think
you put it together in a good way. So if a chief of staff, which is common, is on the interview loop for a CFO, the company needs a new CFO, and the chief of staff is one of the many people that they'll be interviewing with. And let's say the chief of staff, isn't a financial expert, but they still want to make sure they're bringing on a good team member and making a good hire. What would you say to look for or to talk to the CFO about when you're interviewing them?
Well, you know, first and foremost, for somebody that is, you know, like interviewing for a role at a company they haven't previously worked for, or and in your to your very specific question about a, you know, a chief of staff interviewing for a CFO, I often think that a chief of staff role has the pulse on the business as much as anybody in the business, quite honestly. And so to that end, the first thing you want to look for is, irrespective of whatever jargon or, you know, way in which a CFO candidate can explain to you how they analyze a P&L or a balance sheet or structure, you know, a capital market strategy, like, you want to know that they're going to fit in with the team, you know, because the CFO role is a unique one in that I wouldn't say it's a lonely job or sort of, but it can be one where you are a little bit off on an island, and sometimes maybe the one dissenting voice in a room of other executives that are super pumped about maybe something really just pure growth, but maybe it's not all about growth in the end. And maybe you need to be talking about, you know, kind of margin and kind of profitability and kind of like EBITDA expansion, just stuff like that. But you need to know that you're going to be able to work with this person, you know? And I think testing them in how they communicate, first and foremost, is important. I think maybe getting a gauge on how they interact, maybe if they're in some sort of situation where there's some constructive conflict, which I think every executive needs to be well-versed in. If it's not going to be a fit from a kind of cultural or alignment standpoint, you know, no matter how technically awesome they are or whatever, you know, it may not work out. But on the flip side, if you feel like, you know, the person you're interviewing is a, you know, maybe somebody that's like going to align well with the team that you've already, you know, been really close with, and that you know how that pulse, you know, goes, you know, that's a good place to start. And then you can work from there. You don't need to be, as an interviewer, someone that's going to necessarily test the chops of, you know, someone's technical financial background as much, but, you know, you do need to make sure that you're not bringing, you know, kind of like a toxic person to a group that's maybe really already very cohesive, you know? So.
Right. That's a good point. And I think, you know, I'm not a financial expert, but I wanted someone who could explain those concepts to me in a way, one, that I understood. Yeah. And two, in a way that wasn't condescending and didn't make me feel
yeah,
stupid.
Yeah.
And so I remember over like Red Robin, I was like asking you just, like, hey, can you like explain, like, I mean, back then it was like, what is EBITDA and like, why is that important, or all these different things? And I think you explained them so well. And I could tell that you were extremely competent, but you also could communicate that well. So I think that was something I looked for.
Yeah. No, I thought I definitely, you know, that ability to, again, come back, and it keeps coming back to like sort of like building trust both ways, because over the course of years, or, you know, periods as you're budgeting or as you're making tough decisions as a business, you need to know that you can have open conversations amongst folks on the executive team. And, you know, a lot of the time the CFO, because of the nature of where they sit within, you know, looking at the data from a financial standpoint and kind of looking at these indicators of how the business is going to kind of play out, you need to be able to have open conversations and sometimes very tough conversations. And if you don't have that sort of foundation of trust, meaning like, you know, the folks that have worked with the CFO in the past don't feel like every single time they go to ask a question or, you know, raise a concern, that they don't feel like they're going to be treated as less than or whatever, because for whatever reason, you know, maybe people are intimidated by kind of the financial aspects of the business. Like, you gotta make sure that that's not there. Otherwise, you're not going to have a high functioning team. And I think to CFOs out there too, you know, really getting to know the players and not just sitting behind the numbers all the time. You need to understand and put context behind the numbers, you know, like to be able to ultimately give back to the team valuable insight and, you know, execute on action plans. But I've found personally that comes from, you know, for me personally, working for companies that are small enough where I could like literally get to know every single person there, so that if I want to understand why a trend is what it is, I can actually talk with them and really get the real scoop, rather than feel like, you know, maybe people aren't feeling comfortable being open with me about it, because we can solve these problems together, or we can on the flip side of problems, maybe there's a big opportunity. We need to double down our investments in certain areas. Like, we want people to feel like, you know, we're working in this together. But, you know, at the same time, like I said earlier, like sometimes you do as a CFO need to be prepared to be Dr. No, as I've been dubbed at different times of my career, you know, because, you know, sometimes, again, you are sort of that one dissenting voice. And I think CEOs find that to be a very high quality of CFOs, like to have that complementarity and be like, in some ways, good cop, bad cop, actually. And that's what they value. So I've had the fortune of working with a lot of great CEOs, and that complementarity is kind of the, in my mind, like the biggest, the most, one of the most important partnerships you can have in a business is, you know, CEO and CFO being on the same page.
And I think you mentioned that productive tension that is sometimes just inherent in like a CFO and a CRO or a COO role, where sales with all these different things, and CFO sometimes has to say yes to this, but no to these things. Operations is asking for something, or product wants to build something new. And so in that light, maybe you could explain, like, what's the CFO's role there? Because to your point, sometimes it is, oh, this is an opportunity, let's double down and invest here. And sometimes it is, no, we need to stick to our original plan.
My experience is I've gotten to work with some amazing, you know, executives and senior managers and stuff. And a lot of the times that interaction comes from, you know, typical times. Budgeting season is like a big one. There's always a negotiation and there's always a, you know, back and forth. But also, you know, on a sort of like, you know, you work in a small enough company, you're working side by side with one another on deal by deal scenarios. Like, we're looking to board a new customer with this set of products. How should we price this? You know, and so it's, there's this constant back and forth. And, you know, I've tried to take the approach of whenever I'm asked for guidance and, you know, to weigh in on something, to do so, you know, with conviction, but also follow that up with a rationale as to why. Like, you know, I might be asked like to approve a headcount expansion, and, you know, for reasons that, you know, may or may not be clear to the person that I'm working with on that, like, we might have to say, no, we can't do it this quarter. We got to push that out 6 months. We need to see some more sales. You know, we need to see some more progress on these other strategic initiatives before we pull the trigger on that. But what I've tried to stay away from is just saying no and not providing any context.
Right.
Because what that just makes people dejected, and they don't learn. Because part of what I try to do, sometimes I'm better at it than other times, is like, try to understand where they're coming from. Because sometimes I'll see something at face value, I'm like, that is a ridiculous request. Why would we do that? But I'm also not, I'm not all knowing. So I try to open myself up to understanding like their position. And, off, you know, sometimes I'm completely off base and I need to kind of like reassess my guidance. But yeah, on the flip side of that, I want people to feel like, you know, they learn how a CFO looks at things, right? And so, you know, in certain instances, even at G2, like I can remember, like I'd be working with like the CTO, and it would be like, you know, a constant sort of back and forth on negotiating for resources and things like that. And, you know, over time, it was a beautiful thing. Like these, you know, this person would be like, okay, I've put together this P&L so you can see where our, you know, our margin expansion is coming from on what time horizon. And this is the budget asked, and this is the marginal profit. I'm like, dude, you can take my job. Here you go. Nice work, you know? And so like, it's not totally altruistic. It makes my job easier if I don't have to keep sort of asking for the same sorts of like rationale, if people understand how I look at things and things like that. So no, it's cool to see people like expand that way and like learn things that maybe they're baseline discipline, you know?
And I remember you would be in meetings and people would ask you for things. And sometimes the answer was no, and you gave context, which is important. But a lot of times you would ask them questions like, you know, what does that mean? Like, what does that product do? Or what would that give our clients? And then you would encourage people like sales and saying, you know, do you think what percentage of our prospects would take this product up? And then you would ask me, I was in charge of kind of our clients and existing accounts, you know, could you cross sell this thing? And so you were trying to understand how this would work dynamically. And I thought, that's really smart, because it's not just a yes or no, flip a switch answer. It's lots of different layers in there. So you were trying to understand that, I felt like.
Yeah, exactly. And again, part of it, like I said earlier, it's because there's something that I'm likely missing, you know? So, you know, we have so much data at our disposal these days and so many data visualization tools that, you know, that's easier to come by. So to get a whole team on the same page is way easier now, I feel like, than it even was when we started working together 10 years ago. You know, we were just hammering on Excel spreadsheets and PowerPoints all day, my gosh. And, you know, nowadays you can actually have dashboards that are almost real time. So everyone's working from the same page and, you know, you're basically on the same page as the CEO at all times and the board and, you know, kind of problem solve, looking at the same stuff together. So, yeah.
So for a good CFO, I heard, just to try to recap here, providing context to people, understanding the business, not just crunching numbers, though you have to do both, teaching people. So, you know, giving people a little insight on how you approach problems. And then if they come back to you with a beautiful P&L spreadsheet, oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Extra credit for that. Yeah.
Bonus points. Then you've got to kind of know where your strengths are and hire to your weaknesses. And then, what was the other one? I think just my overall thing is a CFO is not just someone crunching numbers. It's, you have to be a people leader. You have to be, interesting.
Yeah, and I'll add one, you almost, that was a fantastic prompt, like you've been doing this for a long time or something. Nah, kidding. I was just going to say one thing I didn't mention earlier is a CFO is very much both an internally and externally focused role. So internally, it's all the things you said. It's working with team members. It's helping build a an operating plan, financial plan to align to the strategic plan that's, you know, more or less spearheaded by the CEO and the board. That's all pretty obvious. You know, you need to take care of your financial hygiene and all that stuff. And you need to make sure that everything's dialed in internally, but it's very much external. And for me personally, that's actually almost the most enjoyable part of that. I like to do deals. So that involves, you know, spearheading efforts around M&A activity. So you might be, a CFO needs to be pretty well versed in being able to work with lawyers, investment bankers, tax accountants, auditors, you know, customers directly, all of that. And I find that to be totally exhilarating. And so, you know, you got to be balanced, you know, in both ways. Very external, very internal. But, you know, on both sides of things, it's like, you know, you're supported by a great group of folks that are specialized and, you know, dialed into just making the things go every day.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many roles like this, but really for CFO, you have to be very technically knowledgeable and technically sound, but then you also have to have extreme, like an extreme breadth of knowledge and interest in people and understanding the different components like auditors and tax and lawyers. Yeah. And different internal teams, like that's a pretty wide spread, you know?
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to bridge all those things. And at the heart of it, you are executing the financial piece of the strategy. So you're saying, okay, here's our mission. Here's our strategy set forth by the board, CEO, whomever. And then I need to build the financial plan for that and plug everyone into that and make sure they're involved.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I take it as a big responsibility, like a serious one, to be the mouthpiece to, you know, the entire company, the employee base. And I haven't worked as a public company CFO where, you know, part of your role, a very important part, is to be, you know, a speaker on earnings calls and really interacting with the public investor community, institutional investors, things like that. I've mostly worked with private equity boards and founder boards and things like that, which I love. But I also like find it to be, I believe in like as much transparency as possible with employees, because I think people need to know why they're doing what they do and how what they do impacts, you know, the key metrics in a business. So growth, you know, top line revenue growth, bottom line profitability, and, you know, kind of capital efficiency, i.e. cash flow. And I believe in as much as possible kind of sharing that transparently with employees so they kind of have the tool set there. So you got to be somebody that can, you know, kind of speak with conviction and kind of authenticity to employees about what's going on. I think that's really important.
Absolutely. And I remember you would get up at all company meetings. Go through the financials, which people were like, he's showing the financials to people, but you would walk people through. And it was really cool because I could see people making connections because they had line of sight to like, oh, that's what my team contributes to. Or, oh, when I do these things with clients, it impacts it this way. So I could just see the light bulbs going off. So giving people that context and that kind of line of communication for how they contribute, but absolutely something that you did publicly.
Yeah. Well, that was one of those that when we talk about making jumps from maybe like a, you know, even like a VP of finance role or, you know, controller role to a CFO, like that was, I remember for me, one of the biggest challenges making the jump was, you know, getting comfortable public speaking and like speaking with people, especially the board, you know, because everybody knows, you know, the numbers, obviously, but to be able to put context behind it in a concise way and tell the story around the numbers, that's a skill. That's a developed skill. Some people are better than others. Took me at least a couple years of like really grinding it out and working on that to be more effective. But you know, like it's, you know, a lot of these skills anybody can do if you just kind of keep working at it. But yeah, that's a big one, is to be able to kind of be that mouthpiece. Again, it's like in all of the board meetings that I've been in and sort of town hall meetings with employee bases and things like that, it's usually, you know, you're locked arms with a CEO. You know, usually those two roles, you know, are kind of the mouthpieces for, you know, what's going on in the business and the outlook. So, you know, comes back to that partnership with a great CEO to, you know, be really a pretty dynamic in that respect.
And you had mentioned public speaking and board meetings. And so that made me remember my very first board meeting, which you were there for.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness. I talk about holy sweat, Batman. I was sweating so profusely. Yeah. I was so nervous.
You and me both. Yeah. Seriously.
But you had done a great job. So I want to give a shout out because as CFO, you had obviously spoken with the board beforehand and gotten a sense of their temperature and what was important to them to get out of the board meeting.
Yeah.
And you helped relay that to the team members who were going to be presenting. And you took special time and attention with me because you knew how nervous I was. And you sat me down and said, here's like what they're wanting to hear. Here's kind of where they're coming from. And I'm assuming you also did it the other way, kind of prepping them and teeing things up that the team was going to present. But that was the first part going in. I remember being in there and you were sitting right across from me and you were taking minutes. And there was this one point where I got lost and I started talking and I couldn't stop talking, but I didn't know what I was saying. So I panic rambled and you kind of did this subtle like stop, like you kind of shook your head, like don't keep going.
Did so I stopped. Wow.
I breathed, which is often helpful. And then I regrouped and started talking about something sensical. And I looked up and you gave a very slight nod and like little smile, like, yes. I always remember that, Rory.
Oh, that's lovely.
Liebhardt got me back on track. Thank
that's
you.
That's great.
Thank you, Big Red. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, and I mean, I don't remember that, but I love that. That's great. I'm so happy that, you know, that you got something from that. Yeah. I mean, like I said earlier, I mean, you knew in that case, you knew everything you needed to know. It's just just breaking through the barrier of being comfortable, just being you with what you know, right? Like that's a thing I struggled with. And even just professionally generally is like feeling like I had to be this archetype of what I thought it was to be a CFO or, you know, other roles I've been in as well. But it's like people see right through that. And the more you're yourself, flaws and all, like the more you actually resonate with people. And just like, I wish I learned that earlier in my life, but you know, no time like the present. But yeah, I think, you know, so many people are extremely smart and know everything top to bottom of what they need to in their domain. But you know, it takes a little while to get comfortable being you in a professional environment, you know? So
I think that's super important. I mean, people can pick up on that either consciously or subconsciously. They know when someone's kind of putting on airs or trying to do something else. And I mean, honestly, you know, the board, sure, they wanted a respectful and polished presentation, but they also just wanted the information. This is their business. They've invested millions of dollars. They want to know what's going on from the people on the ground. Yeah. So that's why I was there.
And they want your perspective on the numbers and what the numbers mean. You know, like, again, if I can impart any sort of wisdom on people that are like stepping up into a role like CFO role where they're going to have to do board presentations and things like that. It's, again, these people are extremely smart people. They can look at the numbers on a page and sort of like interpret all of it. So like to spend your time rotely talking about revenue was X, we grew 4.2% quarter over quarter, our, you know, flow through to EBITDA was, you know, X and blah, 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 blah. They know that. They can see all that. They want to know, you know, what are the factors driving that and what are the risks to, you know, the trajectory you're on, or what are the opportunities of, you know, where we could invest more and kind of focus our energy. So it's like, that's the value creation in the role. It's not just knowing the numbers and like regurgitate them. It's basically interpreting them and giving people insights and the, you know, how you can, impact your business through other activities to change those numbers, you know, ideally for the better, you know?
Yes. I love that point. Cause if you just, yeah, please, anyone, just don't regurgitate spreadsheet numbers. Oh my goodness. It's, you know, what does that mean in real life? How can you action that data? And great point. Cause I remember in that board meeting, they were asking me, Emily, what are people saying when you talk to them about global boarding? Cause this was our new product we were launching and they wanted to know, cause I was speaking to customers, what are they hearing? What are they saying? And so they wanted that piece behind the numbers that they were seeing. So
they wanted Emily's perspective on what that was exactly. Yeah. Not just sort of like a generic, you know, kind of statement. They're like, give me the goop. You're in it. You're like down in the weeds, you know,
So zooming out a little bit, we talked about private equity and we were presenting to our private equity backed board. I'm sure there's a difference between being a CFO at a PE backed place and not. Is there like, can you tell a little bit about the differences there?
Sure. So by nature, private equity, you know, private equity invests in private companies as opposed to public companies. So when you think about public companies, you think about all of the companies that are listed on the stock exchange, you know, and there's various exchanges. But the point is, with being a public company, there is quite a bit more scrutiny, right? Scrutiny is not the right word. There's a lot more public disclosure requirements as it relates to how you're reporting earnings, how you, you know, interact with investors and shareholders and things like that. So it takes a big team of people to be able to kind of address that. I've found with private equity, again, with private companies, it's you're dealing more directly with the ownership group. Cause again, public companies, there's hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of investors in individual shares, right? But you know, with private equity, there's usually a board constitution that's comprised of folks that work at the private equity firm plus the CEO is typically the chairperson of the board, and you maybe have a few independent board members and things like that. I'd say, like, you know, fundamentally speaking, all of the same things apply to both public and private businesses in the sense that, you know, again, the key tenets, you know, financial management, risk management, leadership, all that stuff, that doesn't change between the types of businesses, but there are different nuances. There are different reporting requirements typically with the private equity group. There's different things that they want to see in terms of how the information is presented and how you track the performance of the business. And then you go a step different than, you know, between, like, let's say big public company, private equity group, a backed company, and then you have like maybe like a founder led or just purely bootstrapped venture company. I found it to be, you know, way more loose in the sense of, like, with a venture group or very early stage company, you know, it's almost like, you know, finance and accounting is almost an afterthought at times. There's like the bare minimum. And it usually, you know, quite honestly, a lot of times I see it where, you know, it, once a company goes from founder run to private equity is when they maybe expand the professional back office, if you will. So finance and accounting, administration, HR, some of those things are what you kind of add on once you're sort of past that sort of founder's early stage. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still, you know, accounting, still finance. You still got to look backward and report correctly. And you still got to look forward and, you know, model and, you know, plan for the business to align to its strategy. So I just find that my sweet spot tends to be in that sort of private equity backed small, medium-sized business. Again, because it just comes down to being able to connect with more people and really, you know, have your hand in a lot of different things. Whereas maybe like a really large public company, you might have a CFO, but you also might have a chief accounting officer, and you might have a chief tax, you know, auditor or tax accountant, or you have layers upon layers upon layers oftentimes, and it's very broad and it's deep. I like to be kind of like much more sort of part of a little bit of everything in that way.
And I remember our board would speak to Ed mostly as the president, as the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you came on board and got ramped up, they started calling you more often. They wanted to know about this number and that number, what was going on. And you were almost the funnel or conduit between the two.
Yeah.
So if you were talking to CFOs who were looking to be a CFO specifically for a PE-backed company, what would you say your role is in terms of liaisoning with the board and the company?
That's an awesome question. I found with, you know, not only working with Ed at G2, but other CEOs that I've had the pleasure of working with, that, you know, the greatest high level of functioning as a duo or a team comes from being able to divide that labor, right? So as you mentioned, when I first started in the role under Ed, you know, like, I don't think that the PE group had necessarily built up its trust with me. I was new, I was pretty green, but they already knew Ed, and they, you know, they had been comfortable with Ed and kind of wearing two hats, if you will. But once it got to the point where you've built that trust and they know that you have the insights that they're looking for on certain things, they're not calling me up to talk about a sales plan or executing a business development strategy. They're calling me up to understand kind of how's the financial performance going to roll out on the business over the next couple quarters, and maybe like what are the scenarios that could impact that. They're not going to waste Ed's time with that. Ed's got, or the CEO's got, far more important things to do than kind of also still wear the CFO role hat. But yeah, I've worked with some great CEOs that are, you know, more, let's say, front end business people, you know, whether it's marketing or sales oriented, and, you know, more operational in nature. And I found that to be the coolest part, is when you truly have those complementary skill sets, and then you can kind of divide and conquer in a lot of ways, you know? And so, yeah, those are the dynamics, I think, like, you know, working with a board, you know, they know who to go to for that kind of insight. And yeah, it just scales people out, you know, just like any other roles on a company. If you have like complementary skill sets, you just unleash the potential because, you know, you've got more capacity.
Yeah, I think that's a great kind of way to wrap up here. And complementary skill sets, chiefs of staff, we talk about that with our principal and CEO, but equally so with CFO, COO, the rest of the executive team. So I think part of it is holding that that integrity of the team, kind of holding that together.
Yeah.
Rory, you've shared so much great information, and I'm certainly not a financial person, and I've learned a lot from you, and I've picked up a lot over the years. But to anyone listening, if they come from a financial background or not, is there any parting pieces of advice you would want to make sure people know?
I'd say, it's a CFO role, you know, CFO, you know, finance people, what have you. I mean, it's no more or less, you know, important than any other role, right? Like, so don't approach it with intimidation. Approach it with, if you're a leader and executive of a business, you have every right to be in the weeds with the CFO to understand the drivers of the business. And so, you know, if you have the ability to make that connection with your CFO, hopefully they'll reciprocate your curiosity and your desire to learn with the ability to share, you know, and to sort of lock in with you that way. So, and, you know, I do think it's for aspiring executives to have at least a baseline foundation of, you know, financial principles and drivers to business from a financial standpoint. You got to have that because it helps you become a more well-rounded executive. Just like I say with CFOs, you know, get to know the operation, get to know sales and marketing, lock arms with them. You know, you'll become more well-rounded as a business person as well. So,
all right, that we're going to leave it on that, because that was a great, Rory, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talking to you, and thanks for being on the show. Yeah.
Yes. It's been my pleasure. Take care.
Sharing is caring. Send a link to this show to someone you think would enjoy it and tag Emily on LinkedIn. She'll give you a shout out on the next episode as a thank you for helping get the word out.